Welcome to Took Talk, a video podcast by the band Took. We chat with the best in the music industry from yesterday and today with a focus on the good old days of Canadian rock. This episode originally streamed live on Tuesday, November 16th, 2021 on YouTube Live. Now, here are your hosts, Todd, Brent, Shane, and Corey. Good day.
How's it going?
Welcome to Took Talk.
Ooh, Pez.
The
Darth
old
Vader Pez.
The Pez comes out of his neck. Very familiar.
How old are you, Todd?
Well, I haven't tried a Pez since. I haven't tried a Pez since.
Actually, I have to confess, I have a whole box of them.
Might be worth money.
I got a few of them around here somewhere. I got a lot of weird things in here.
Right on. So episode 75. We're
good lord.
Almost. We got 25 till we hit 100. Turning my phone off here. It was beeping.
Oh my goodness.
Me too.
75?
Yeah.
Holy cow. That's crazy.
That's so insane. Look at everybody in the chat room here. We have everybody representing.
Representing.
Cody Roth. Christy Jacques.
Wow. Jacques. Lots of us here.
Jacques.
Gloria. Hi, Gloria.
Marlene. Kiwi Tina. Hey, Kiwi.
Yeah, well, she's
amazing.
How about Alf? He's always on, and he's long. He's the furthest away. He's from Buenos Aires, or I think he's
he's from Argentina.
I might be wrong.
You think that's further than New Zealand? I don't know.
Oh, sorry. You're right.
I don't know.
Jimmy D. Chantel. Welcome to Took Talk, guys. So glad you could join us. Hey, there's three of us right now. Shane is, he got an emergency gig to replace somebody who got COVID on a tour.
That's right.
So he is shedding like crazy. Apparently it's a jazz fusion kind of gig. Requires a lot of concentration. You can't just wing it. You have to know all the hits and all the things that happen together as the band. So
if I had a dime for every jazz fusion gig I was called on, I'd have zero dimes.
Look at me.
Yeah. I mean, maybe something like that. No, I could do something like, you know, more like a crooning gig. Maybe I'm, you know.
Yeah.
But actually,
that's
jazz.
That's a good excuse.
All that kind of
good
stuff.
That's not be here.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't have been here either. But luckily, I made it home yesterday because I just did the same damn thing.
That's right.
Yeah, how did that go? COVID. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Fitz went back in time and was suddenly in the drummer's seat for Theory of a Dead Man, or Theory, as we call them now.
Two members of Theory that have been on Took Talk already.
Yeah.
But let's just go back for a second. Let's go back to like 2019, because all of us in Took has subbed out in you know, we'll go back to Corey, you coming in on the Slash gig. And Shane.
Yeah.
And kind of since then, we've all had to do a little bit of that to help each other out on different things. And more recently, it's because of COVID. But Todd had that scenario, 2 months ago?
Something like that,
with
Corey
Taylor. So, you know, day of show phone call. Hey, House of Blues show, Vegas, sold out. Let's rock. Right? So I kind of got the same thing on Friday where those guys had basically Joe was on like 9th or 10th day quarantine, and you know, as soon as you can test negative, you know, you're good to go, you're not going to be contagious. But what happened is it was just one of those things where those guys were like, well, if there's anybody that's going to know the show, it's Brent, who did the gig before. Except when they called me, they've had 4 records since then, so I didn't know any of the songs, so I had to woodshed on the plane in the morning heading out to
Wait, are you saying Nashville. you went out day of show? Like we're learning on day of show, or how? When did you get the call?
Yeah, they called me in the afternoon, and I mean I couldn't get on a plane that soon because it was late in the day phone call, and then but first thing in the morning I was on the plane, and then there you go.
Yeah.
But that's what we do. That's what Shane's doing right now, and you would do the same thing, Corey. Hey, they call you to go play with Kelly Clarkson, you know, kind of day before or stuff, right? This is what we do.
Why not? Why not?
Yeah, there's a lot. You've done that a lot too, Corey, haven't you? Like with some of these gigs kind of over the years have been sort of maybe not necessarily last minute, but then when they come in, you're kind of like, okay.
Yeah. You got to be, if you got time in your schedule, then you can take it, but you have to really shed, you know?
That's the thing.
The hardest thing is, I mean, it's easy to chart out the songs and read off a page, you know, oh, there's the chords, but it's another thing to remember them and to remember the names and know how that song sounds, right? So I learn all the parts, I'll usually like put on my headphones when I walk the dog. So I'm always constantly bringing in those tunes. So they, you know, kind of become ingrained into my brain.
The hard thing for me was just the, you know, if you're watching a chart as a drummer, I always feel like because we're behind everybody else on stage, I want to be looking forward and I want to be watching everybody else in the band and being part of it. So I'm doing that, but when there's a chart beside me, I have to look over at the chart. And if I lose track on the chart, then train wrecks happen. So, and I'm more worried about the train wreck. So I don't know how you did it, Todd, with Corey, but I had to have some notes and I put them on the side and just, you know, that was what I did. And I couldn't see them because the light show, as soon as the lights go on, I'm like, well, where's the fucking charts?
Yeah. You need like the,
it's a whole other thing with lights. Yeah.
Do you need like an iPad of some sort or something like that? That could kind of,
well, sure. That's an organized in the future mentality. Me, it's like, nope, frantically, you know, writing out scratch on the airplane. And then I just look at the notes. I usually write down lyrics because you can always follow lyrics and certain little catchphrases. Mm-hmm. And then I write down C or like verse one, V1, C2. And then how many times it goes, 8 bars. That's sort of an easy, good way to
C meaning chorus. V meaning verse. Yeah. For those following along.
Yeah. But the new theory stuff is really great. And it great in a way where it's a little bit unorthodox, where second chorus might go, you know, twice as long, but there might be a extra bar. And then if you don't get that extra bar, you are instantly, everyone's looking at you like, what happened there? So
yeah, of course.
A little scary.
Yeah.
Anyway, we love this stuff. Remember when Shane came in on the Slash gig? He only had a day. And it's hard on drums, drummer, because you're sort of, you're the conductor of the band. So,
That was super crazy. How much time did you have to get ready for Slash, Corey?
Well, I had 10 days.
Okay.
To do the first rehearsal with you guys. So in those 10 days, I learned the show. And then I had a month off before I played a show.
That was
so
weird.
That worked in my favor. I was,
We have you like cram just for a rehearsal, then just go home and like sit around for a month. That was so interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. So it wasn't nearly as bad for me as it was for you guys. Definitely.
I bet. Well, I mean, you came in and, you know, you were seamless on that show. With Shane, it was a lot more chaos. And we were doing it live at the Ryman Theater in Nashville for the first time ever with Shane Gallis.
That's a big gig.
Yeah, it's a big gig. So we were kind of like all very sort of, although he was amazing at it, but anybody who was there was like, that guy killed it. And I'm like, yeah, he really killed it. I mean, you know, it wasn't 100% only based on like, there's a stop here or a thing there or a break, whatever. But he was like, you know, he was doing the best he could. Same thing. No, he had an extra tom-tom over here with his notes on top of that.
Check this out. There's only three of us, so I might as well be the biggest one, right?
It works out well. Except the,
I don't know how.
It's a lot like when you're that large, then they get to see like boogers in your nose or anything. There you go. Now that's the way we like it.
This is even better. Yeah, thanks for coming, guys.
Yeah. Featuring, it's Corey Churko's Took Talk featuring Corey Churko.
So we are just waiting for our guest to show up for today.
Tells me he's signing on pretty quickly here. So, you could probably keep him in the green room.
That's good.
I'm
getting all. Yep.
The insanity of a live show is this what I'm going to say. But go on.
Yeah. I almost missed getting ready for today because I was in Shania Land working on dusting off the cobwebs.
That's right.
And I was like, oh shit, quickly. What time is it? Yeah. Yep. Within a week, I'll be a week less, a little less than 6 days.
You'll be in the 702.
I'll be giving her. No.
Well, you're rehearsing first in LA, right?
We're going to rehearse here. And then we come after Thanksgiving to Vegas.
Oh, okay, cool.
And I'll see all your ugly mugs in person.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where are you staying? What room are you going to be in? I just put that out to the internet.
Well, you'll redeem yourself because you guys were right in the thick of it during COVID. Remember, Corey? I think you played a show. Yeah. One of the last shows. Love it.
Was that
name that tune?
Who's better, that your boots under or what? Is that what that is?
Well
is
done, that? Todd. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's better, have your boots?
How about this one? You know that one?
That's Any Man of Mine.
Yeah, one of the first times I ever heard that song was at your house, Todd.
That's right. I played Corey that record. I was like, check this record out, man. It's like Mutt Lang produced this country record.
Yeah. We were scratching our chins like, oh, yeah, yeah. That. Oh, wow. It goes to double time there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like Def Leppard drums on a country song. Oh, this is insanity. This will never work. And then it worked. It changed the entire game. Yeah.
It really did.
Yeah.
Okay, guess who's here?
Oh, my God. I'm not prepared for him now.
Oh, okay. Should we keep going without him?
I'm just kidding. The whole reason we're here.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, this guy, I love these guys. I still love these guys, frankly. We see Tom more than we see Theo these days. Okay, fair enough. But Gob were a lot of fun. Love their videos. I actually just went down a rabbit hole, like getting waiting for this to come up. So I was like,
me
really
too.
Enjoying this whole thing. The videos are just next level.
Totally.
But amazing dude. We ran into him oddly enough in like Thunder Bay last time. I don't know if you saw him, Fitz, but he came to a Thunder Bay show and we were playing there with Slash. And but anyway, the best part about this is that he explained two pronunciations for his name, Theo Gouginakis.
Whoa.
Theo Gouginakis or Theo Gutsanakis. Ladies and gentlemen, from Gob, Theo Gutsanakis.
Yeah.
Hey.
Welcome.
Hey.
I appeared.
Yeah, it's like a magic show now. Yeah.
How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing better today that it's sunny. It was raining for like 5 or 6 days in a row out here in Vancouver. So
yeah.
And I was in LA, just shortly, a couple weeks ago, whatever. And it was just like obviously gorgeous. So it came home to the crappy weather. So
I heard all the freeways are closed. Theo, I heard Coquihalla all closed.
Yeah. I did. I heard there was some mudslides and stuff.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, that one town, I don't know if you guys heard about it, but it broke the world record like three times, whatever. Linton, BC, that in the summertime, it was like, I think it was 49.6 degrees Celsius, which was hotter than Vegas at the time summer in BC. Wow. It was like the hottest temperature recorded from the 45 degree parallel line, out of the whole world. So it was like in 3 days it broke records, and the fucking I think what happened was a train went through there and it sparks off the tracks, which there was witnesses, and then the whole fucking town went up in like the whole town. Yeah, so many people. Like, I mean, I don't think there wasn't many loss of lives because it was during the day, and if it would have been at night, it would have been way worse. I can't remember if might have been a couple of people perished. I mean, that sucks completely. But the whole thing is now the fucking main highway to that town has been completely obliterated. So it's like,
wow,
that fucking place just got served like the last couple of months. Just the fucking, just the worst fucking shit.
Brutal. Wow. I was just going to say, because reading all that stuff lately about the floods and whatnot, I mean, didn't they just have to go through all like fires like for the whole summer? We were dealing fires.
Yeah, there was. Yeah. I guess because I don't know if there was any responsibility taken from the railroad company or whatever, or any of those witnesses that saw the fire start. They saw sparks and igniting. So I think it wasn't confirmed or something. I mean, I haven't followed up on it in the last little while, but I just
It's a pretty difficult thing to point blame at, I suppose. You know, it's like trains have sparks. That's kind of what happens, I suppose.
I guess there was a certain amount that they do start every year, but it was more than normal, I think, in But anyway, it's pretty tragic, especially, it sucks that a whole bunch of people lost their houses lost their loved ones, I guess. I don't know the full outcome of, I just remember hearing about it. I wake up and have a coffee and I turn the news on and it's just like the BC news or whatever. I just remember it. Anyway, we don't have to keep talking about it.
But so it's bad. It's just bad news everywhere. That's
yeah. Just well, you guys brought up the Coca Cola. Yeah. So I don't even know why I'm being interviewed or being on this thing. You guys have, there's talent here. You guys, you play in Slash's band, you play bass, and then one of you guys plays drums in Yngwie Malmsteen. Is that right?
But he's not here today.
Yeah, he's not here today.
Okay. And then does someone play in Alice Cooper?
Fitz has played with Alice Cooper.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He did. Yeah.
Okay, who's playing in Shania Twain then?
Corey is.
Corey
up there.
And
so he's gonna be in Vegas doing that pretty soon. So yeah.
Oh, yeah. And what band?
Do you want to hear my fiddle playing again?
don't be ridiculous. Of course.
Don't be stupid. Be ridiculous. Don't tempt me. Actually, I was just about to grab it and play it, but
he's been rehearsing. I resisted. Song, so it's all very fresh. Before he'll do the whole show.
I'm surrounded by my instruments right now because I've got every guitar and every tuning, and I'm just trying to remember the show.
That's awesome.
We're starting back in Vegas. You know, since COVID.
Oh, nice. Yeah, and it must be nice to start jamming again.
Totally.
Yeah. I haven't had the chance to do that. A couple of the guys are in New York from Gob, so it's kind of hard to jam with those guys. But
Tom's been out there for quite a while. I know that. Who else?
Yeah, he got married to a really nice lady that he was with for a long time, and then they got married and live in New York. And bass player Stephen Fairweather, he's in New York too. He's on the Lower East Side out there.
How did he end up out there?
He's like a fan. he loves city life. He likes Concrete Jungle. Sure. And he also is a huge comic book nerd and loves Batman. So Gotham City is, you know, obviously taken from New York City. Yeah. So I guess this is way just living vicariously through Bruce Wayne.
Do you think he's actually out there fighting crime? is he wearing spandex at night and stuff like that?
I think he's more fighting rhymes than crimes. Because he's doing a hip hop kind of thing. He was trying out and he sent me something. It wasn't actually too bad. It was pretty good, actually.
That's but, really. Right.
Yeah, no, he's just out there. He has a place out there, so it's
that's so awesome. So is Tom in the city? I think Steven's actually here by the looks of the comments section.
How come Stephen I don't Fairweather? See any comments? Yeah.
It's just on the right-hand side.
Oh, usually. There we go. Okay, I clicked on the comments. That's what I can see.
Oh, hello, Steven.
Yes, that's there amazing. He is. That's hilarious.
So is Tom in the city as well?
I guess, do I say hi to these people that are saying Marlene, Van?
You can if you want.
Yeah, or I just saw the comments now, so I haven't been
there. You go. Yeah. See how popular you are, Theo?
Yeah. Hey, I was with Pat Stewart last night, Theo, and Pat Stewart was like, "No way, Theo's on the show this week." So he's your fan.
Oh, fucking so cool that you brought that up. So I also do this solo project called Theo and the Thugs.
Yeah, I was going to comment on that video in a minute, but go ahead.
And that's Stephen Fairweather that put that together. But he kind of just put it together and sent it to me and just said, "What do you think?" And I said, "Looks like we've got a video."
Nice.
But the thing with what we were talking about, Pat Stewart was that he was in the studio. He was doing the drum teching for the Theo and the Thugs record. So I did like 13 songs, and one of them was a Platinum Blonde cover song.
Yes.
that I did. I mean, I played all the instruments on it, guitars, bass, and did all the vocals. I had obviously my brother and a couple of the Gob guys do some harmonies and stuff on it. And the drummer was my good friend Lawrence Butler. But for one song, because he took off and he went to Toronto, he was going with his girlfriend somewhere, and I had one song that wasn't finished. And Pat Stewart always wanted to jam with me, and he was doing the drum tech. So that day, I was like, I thought they were going to tear down the stuff at the Armory Studio. So I phoned Pat. I said, "Hey, are you available today?" And he's like, "Sure." He goes, "Can you do a song?" So in 45, like, he got to the studio. He'd never heard the song. So I played the song, and it's like, it wasn't like an easy, like, straightforward. It had like 7/4 time signature in the beginning part, you know, that had 4/4, and then it breaks down into a couple different time signatures. But he listened to it in 45 minutes. He did listen to it, charted it out, went out and jammed it, and then gave me 7 amazing takes in 45 minutes. And the drum, and it was just like, I was just like, for it. So the one song that's going to come out, it's a song called June that I did, and it's me with an acoustic a bit intro. It's so different than most of the stuff that I normally do, because I'm like kind of more singing than yelling at people.
Is that Pat's comments? What does he say? Oh, right.
Is that someone saying something there?
Ask about his new song, June. I think he'll light up. Such a good guy. Say hi from me.
There you go, Matt Stewart.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's right. Yeah. And it was, I mean, yeah. Brian Amy, obviously, he was just in Vegas playing with Brian Adams. And actually, me and him, he's been bugging me to make, or we're supposed to hang out. I make amazing, I mean, I don't want to toot my horn, just my friends. So I make good pizzas from scratch.
Crust,
fermented crust. Mm-hmm. I do all those. Anyway, it's so, yeah, he's supposed to come out and we're supposed to hang out. Listen to music and eat some fucking pizza.
Oh, I want to be at that party.
I think there'll be drinks too, drinks and pizza.
Yeah.
So.
I'm sure. Yeah,
I took Pat out last night pretty late, but he actually has been a bit of a vegan, sort of just keeping.
Oh, really?
Keeping in that lane.
Oh yeah,
that's awesome. You know,
yeah, Corey, because he's been playing. He plays with Brian Adams, and that goes hand in hand, right?
But he also played on Brian Adams, that one, the record with the Summer of 69. What was that album? Was it called?
I think it's Reckless, isn't it?
Reckless. I think it was Reckless.
That would be Reckless. A big one.
Yeah, a huge one. Yeah, and then he also put Live Aid, too. I saw videos of Pat playing online, like in Philadelphia, like in the 80s. Yeah. He had that like total new wave hairdo or whatever. And fucking amazing. And he's just up there drumming. He's just so, because he's an amazing drummer, too. He's solid.
Really is,
he's a great studio drummer, obviously, too. But I mean, obviously,
he's been with the Odds for like what, 30 years or something like that. Or
he's like a Matthew fucking Good awesome too. Guy. He's such a Matthew great Good. Guy too. Yeah, and Matthew Good too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, he played with Matt Good. Yeah,
yeah. We actually had a tour. We did a tour with Moist and Matthew Good in 1999, and it was weird because it was a weird mix up. You know.
Was that the Matthew Good band or was that Matthew Good solo? I don't remember
how. Matthew Good band.
Okay, yeah. Hmm.
I wasn't sure if we should have done that tour because we had two lined up. There was that tour offered to us, and then there was another tour that was Gob, Moist, Korn, Hole, Bare Naked Ladies. Bare Naked Ladies.
You said Cornhole.
Gob, wait, wait. Bare Naked Ladies, Moist, Gob, Cornhole.
Cornhole.
What a lineup.
That's incredible.
I've never seen Cornhole before. Are they good?
It's a fun game.
Everyone just thought that was a porn, so we couldn't do that to it.
Yeah, exactly. It gets a little blue after 10 p.m. Yeah.
Great. Yeah, we actually had a bell. We had a giant bell that we rented from a props movie company, like a studio, big whatever movie company studio here in BC. And it was like a giant church bell. It was like, it just, I'm like, I remember seeing the video of AC/DC when they dropped this giant bell come down. And this bell was like, you know, I think it was like 4 or 5 feet, and it was huge and round, but it was light as, you know, it was light because it was made out of whatever styrofoam, I guess, but it was painted and it looked like, you know, brass that's been aged with the green on it. Looked fucking amazing. It looked like a real metal bell. Anyway, so we thought, we want to bring a bell. We drop a bell down, and then our drummer Gabe had a giant fucking like Thor like sledgehammer, and he would hit it, but that was Styrofoam too, and he would hit it, and then we'd come out playing Hell's Bells as the intro to get the crowd going.
Oh my God.
So we would drop the bell, but it was about two shows in where we were told we're not allowed to drop the bell because we were the opening band.
Upstaging so the rest of the bands.
And then they wouldn't let us lower the bell, so the bell had to stay in place. So I came out to do it. And then we were jumping off of their boxes and their monitors, so they took all those away. Like as the tour went on, we had a 3-week tour, and they kept taking things away from us. I mean, wow. I don't know if it was just like challenging throwing the first band on.
But I like it.
I guess because cool. We just had a lot of energy. Obviously, we were probably younger than all those guys too at the time. So
yeah,
that's so whack to me though. Like the idea of. You know, like when Kiss probably in their first initial stages, did anybody come out and tell them?
Oh, don't go away. The stories will get better, I swear.
It's a walkout.
Hey, you know why I left? Because I just wanted to fucking tell you this.
Oh, fucking, that's... Dude,
who's got a fucking gob hockey puck? I do.
Okay, so I don't know where mine is. I don't have it, but I have one.
Who's got a gob hockey puck?
Wow.
Of course, I have one, but you know what? Mine's signed by number 91 Detroit Red Wings, Sergei Fedorov.
No way.
Ooh. Wow. He came to see us in Toronto at some Molson blind date thing. Like, whatever, wow. He was there with his, you know, his girlfriend or the person he was with was Anna Kournikova, which was a tennis player.
Wow. Yeah, so, sure. Yeah. Right.
So I'm like, walk up to him with a hockey puck and he signs it. Then I walk up to her with a pair of Goblick's ass girls' panties that glow the dark that says Goblick's ass. And I got her to sign it. So it was just like, and she was kind of weirded out about it. Like, you know,
kind of.
And it's like,
oh, that's hilarious.
What's your hockey team?
What's the hockey team?
Oh, I mean, like in the NHL?
Yeah, who do you cheer for?
Well, I mean, I used to cheer. I mean, the Canucks, obviously, because of Vancouver. But, I mean, I haven't been watching hockey for a few years. I've just been kind of like, ever since they went with Boston Bruins in that, I think it was 2012 or 13. Because they did win, Canada won the Olympics, Canadian Olympics in Vancouver. I was here, and I walked around. I was like, I was here for that whole crazy gold game that Canada, and then I think it was a couple years later, I think it was 2012, I can't remember, but it was all these riots in Vancouver and people went stupid and ape shit. And when they lost, I mean, they should have, you know, they've got so far, and it was just, you know, obviously everyone was like, you know, wanted them to win, especially me. I was bummed out of Vancouver for the way they acted. I thought it was just moronic. And then
I had a bunch of times. Do you remember the riot when Guns N' Roses canceled something? Do you remember that one?
There was that.
Yeah. Or Axl didn't show up, so they rioted. Yeah, and then there was every year it was kind of like whether the Canucks were winning or whether the Canucks were going to lose, there was going to be a riot that night. It was always like, are you kidding me? And you live in like the West End, Vancouver downtown. So it's like, now you just stay inside because there's going to be tear gas floating around in the air. And you're like, are you serious, man? It's like, it's a hockey game. Everybody relax. And half the time, I don't think people care about a hockey game. They're just looking to kind of get into some, you know, some riot for no reason. It's one thing to riot about, I don't know, something that's important, but I don't know. Your team winning or your team losing, depending, either way, we're going to riot.
Doesn't matter. I think in Montreal, I think they riot if it wins or loses.
There you go.
The Canadians.
Yeah, Corey lived in Vancouver back then, too. Were you ever around for any of those riots? Did you cause any of those riots, Corey Churko?
No, I think I was gone by that time. By the time the riot started.
I was there a few times when they would riot. Yeah. I love
busking and rioting.
Busking and rioting. Yeah, that was the Corey
Churko. Busking,
Corey lived in Vancouver. He would be busking out on Granville Island or something like that. Or
and the Seabus Terminal.
Seabus Terminal, yeah.
And consequently, I tried one time at English Bay, and that's when you were there.
That's right. Todd. That's right. That's when I reconnected with Corey after a couple of years. I'd lost track of him. Yeah. But
I have a fond memory of English Bay when I was like 7 or 8 years old and went down on a skateboard on a sort of a steep embankment going towards the ocean. It was just like a bike trail. And of course I wiped out and road rashed my whole leg. Ooh, like from the side. And I was, you know, young, and my dad was there being the, cause my parents were Greek. And so they threw a fucking fishing net in the water in the ocean to catch smelts. Like, it was just, I mean, obviously being young, you're just like, whatever, I guess this is normal. But I remember him grabbing me and then just dropping me in the ocean, like with the whole like skin road rash of the pavement.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I thought wiping out hurt, but actually it bit me in the salt water.
Oh, my God.
He's like, this will kill germs. Yeah. Now go play, go.
Were your parents actually like first generation, like just
They were immigrants that came from Greece to Canada, and they were born there and moved here. They met, my mom and dad both met in Vancouver.
Oh, they did.
And,
okay,
yeah, and then I was born downtown. Yeah, they were both Greek. Yeah,
okay.
My mom from the Spartan kind of, I guess, ish area, and my dad.
So you were born downtown at like
in St. Paul's Hospital, Vancouver.
Yeah, that's where my kids are born. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, it's not there anymore. I heard they're turning into condos or something. Have you heard this?
I think it's still there, but there was something going to happen. I don't know if they were actually going to go through with it. I heard
it's the Vancouver way. Turn it all into the Commodore. Someday it'll be condos. You know,
hopefully. I mean,
knock on wood.
There's so many, like, Riches on Richards and the Starfish Room or the Club Soda. It was back in the day. Like, all those cool rock venues. The
Town Pump.
And those all went away.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still some smaller ones and that are, you know, that do a little pub kind of club things. But I guess the in between, like, the bands that draw, you know, smaller amount to that medium size to the bigger, I don't know. Unless you get like a certain hall or whatever, or you sell a certain amount of tickets. I mean, because a Commodore, obviously, you need to probably have 800 to 1,200.
Yeah.
And then there's the Vogue. Isn't that just across the street?
Theater's got to
I think that's 500 or 600 people. That's like, it's like, I think it's on the Vogue is down the street on the same side. But yeah. The Vogue's good. We played there. I like the Vogue Theater.
Have you ever played the Orpheum? Was there any other? I mean, it seems like such a grown-up place to play. I've never played.
Yeah, I saw Morrissey at the Orpheum. I saw Henry Rollins
there. What about Queen Elizabeth Theater? We did.
Yes, we played. I played there with Cake. We played a show with Cake.
Oh wow! Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were total fucking dicks. Like they
were about those guys.
Three bands. The three bands. I can't remember the opening band. It was then us and then Cake. But we were on this bill. The management got us on this bill. And again, it's these weird shows where it's like they're more. I don't know. Like sometimes it's these top 40 bands or these. Sometimes they're not even modern rock. I guess Cake was on Fox or like modern rock, I think. And
that
they were weird. It was just like you'd be nice to me, and then
That Steal Your Sunshine song was definitely on C-Fox back then. Yeah. Steal Your Sunshine, whatever, or Steal My Sunshine, wherever that song went.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Cake. I'm thinking of somebody else. Never mind.
That was
Lit.
Hi.
No.
No, it starts with a
Lit. Len.
Len. That's it.
Len, that's it.
I immediately went to the Vancouver thing again, because those guys. Okay, so Cake. No, Cake were short skirt and a long jacket. They had a lot of cool songs, I'm a driver,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and we played them.
Going the Distance, songs like that. Yeah.
Oh, right. I know that song.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, dad.
They were dicks. So everybody be nice.
They're okay. They're no Age of Electric or anything, but they're.
Those guys are jerks. Yeah.
No.
Did we ever do like, I was trying to think, like, did we ever do like, I'm sure we must have been on like an Edge Fest together or something like that at some point, but.
It's weird because band member, like Kurt and Ryan Dahl, we worked with Kurt he did drum teching for us for like How Far Shall It Take You in 98.
I remember that.
Back in 98, we were working with Blair Calababa. And and Ryan obviously met him through, he was working with another band that me and Tom worked with, By a Thread. Stephen Fairweather was actually in it. But he also, I think he was, he had a studio, Ryan, and he was working with bands on the side and recording and mastering and stuff. But yeah, I mean, other than that, I've hung out with those guys, but not. I don't think we've ever played shows. Like,
I know it's a weird thing. Weird. Is it a weird thing? Because in the back when we were all doing our thing,
did Neil King work with you guys?
King. Yeah, Neil
that's
King.
That's right. Because that's where he brought you guys up. We were at Mushrooms, and then and then he goes. I remember Neil because we did World According to Gob with Neil King, and we were talking about. I said, "What other bands besides obviously Elvis Costello, Green Day, Jawbreaker he was working with?" And he said, "Age of Electric." I'm like Todd Kern's Age of Electric, like the one in Canada. He goes, "Yeah," and I'm like, "Oh," and I didn't know. So it was like, I remember that from back in 2000. So this is the first time even like that memory was still planted in there. But
yeah, that was at, well, because we work with him at Mushroom Studios.
That's
which
right.
Is, I know Howard from Heart, Howard Lease. So every time I'm in Vancouver and I drive by, I always take a picture of that building because he spent a lot of time in Mushroom Studios back in like the, like before all of us even existed. You know what I mean?
So I have a Neil King story with you guys. This is why I remember it now. It's all coming back because when you brought Mushroom Studio, he swears like he was in the control room, Neil King, and he was working with you guys, and he saw like an apparition or some transparent thing go by out in the ISO room. Like, you know, when you can see in the room where they're tracking, yeah. It's separated from the mixing board in the room. I mean, just so the listeners. You could see into the room and you could see, he saw like a head and partial body float across and he looked and saw it. And then he just kind of looked at someone and said, anyone see that? And he saw it. And he's into this. He remembers that when we were like, he was telling me that story.
There's a big story about that place being haunted. Essentially, there was a really crazy story about when we were doing that record. Somebody, I want to say like Neil from 5440, somebody's kid had drawn a picture of this, you know, like a child's drawing of a person, and they were kind of pointing like this. It was like really distorted looking human, and it was just a picture of this. And I go, what is this? And somebody goes, oh, so-and-so's kid drew a picture of the ghost. And I go, and it created all kinds of Damien Omen kind of like child, you know, children have a kind of creepy thing. And I took it. I just took it. All I could see was a picture of this body like this. And I took it to the photocopier that was in the office part, and I photocopied it. And as it was coming out, there was the word Y-E-K on the photocopy. And I was like, what? And I ran in and I showed everybody, can you believe this? It has this, it's not on the original, but in the dark lights in the studio, I couldn't see that the kid had wrote that word in yellow crayon. So it just, in the room, you couldn't really see that that he had written that in the low lighting. But and he goes, I guess that was the name of the ghost of Mushroom Studios. And I was like, immediately holy. Like, this is the album cover. Let's call the album Yak. It'll be this whole thing. And nothing ever came. But at that, you know, as you're standing there watching it come out of the machine and it says something that it didn't say on the original version, I was like, this is beyond creepy, dude. But it's funny that you bring that up. Yeah, there's been a long story. It's some sort of office of some sort now. It might be like an editing suite or something now. But I guess the ghost probably just stays there. I don't know. Believe in such things.
Yeah, and I just saw someone saying hi from Poland. Hello, Polski Elgorski. that's the only Polish I know. I
guess what does that mean?
Polish pickle? I think it means
sounds delicious.
Or Gorski is pickle. Well, you saw it on the jars in the store. You see, it says Polski Gorski. So,
What is Johnny Lang? Like,
what's the difference between these pickles and what is it? And then that's it means Polish for pickles. Of it. But hi, Poland, anyway.
Johnny Lang says, speaking of stories, I'd love Theo to tell the whole story about how he had a brief run in with the best guitarist the world has known. I'm unworthy to utter his name. What is that?
Okay, Johnny? So I have met Slash and Eddie Van Halen.
Oh, wow.
So alive? Is he talking about alive? Or?
Yeah.
I didn't say.
Go with Ed. Because
I saw a brief clip of it after he passed away. So it must be
Eddie. Yeah, so Eddie Van Halen. Yeah, so in 1998, when we did that, we were talking about the How Far Shall Takes You, where actually Kurt Dahl did the drum teching on. So Tom and I, and actually one of my younger brothers, we went to Los Angeles to get the, cause it's recorded on, you know, as we know, not Pro Tools back in the day, it was all 2-inch tape. And then it's mixed down from 2-inch analog tape to 1/2-inch, you know, a stereo track. So we brought these tape analog reels to get them mastered with us, to LA and, walking through the airport with the fucking, How Far Shall It Take You Masters. I see in the corner of my eye, I fucking see in this courtyard, I could see this guy far away kind of smoking. And he must have been like 20 or 30 feet like out of the window. And I walk by and I just in my head, I'm like, fuck, that looked like Eddie Van Halen. And then they were kept walking, and Tom went over there looking. He goes like, "That's not fucking Eddie." And then we kept walking, and my brother, and then we're like, and so you know, like whatever. Like we get a bit further, like a minute. I'm like, "No, I fucking swear, I fucking have him on my wall." Growing up, I had Eddie on my wall, and I, you know, always try to, you know, like obviously, you know, wish I could even play remotely close to that guy. I mean, and I go back just on that fucking gut feeling, and I went inside there through the courtyard, walked through the fucking bushes, and the lo and behold, it was fucking Eddie.
Wow. And,
and I was in my head going, okay, motherfucker, act cool. Don't be a fucking idiot. Don't like fucking blow this. And of course, when I see him, like, did you use 1969 Plexi head in the first God, Van Halen album? Like, you know, asking him the fucking idiot. Like, oh, God. I was like, and it just went into like total like nerd guitar stuff. And
he probably was really nice though, right?
But he probably was.
He was super nice. And actually, I was told that he doesn't like to shake hands with people, like, and stuff. Okay. But he was like patting me on the shoulder, shaking my hand. But he, and I, wow. I guess he might have, was probably surprised, as like he thought, you know, because I was younger in my 20s or early or whatever at the time, I guess 20 something. Yeah, I think he was just sorry. And he had a bag of tubes, or it had a box with, he's like, on my way to Alaska to do a Van Halen. It was with that guy, from Extreme, that was
Gary Sharon.
Gary Sharon, sorry, yeah. He was. They were on the way up to. So, but he answered a bunch of my questions. And the thing that was kind of cool when my brother and Tom got back there, because we were hanging out with him for about 10 or 12, 15 minutes. I know whatever. And then my brother brought out the video camera, the old Hi8, you know, click. You know, record, you know, I'm like, what the fuck? We brought a video camera. Like, why? And he started filming, and right away, the tour manager or whatever, he's like, what is this? An in-store? And that's where my video that I put online comes in, where you show Eddie, and then the guy comes in and says, what is this? An in-store? Come on, let's wrap this up, or whatever. But that was at the very end. But he was sweet, and, you know, it was one of my guitar heroes. And it was like, actually, him and Slash were one of the, you know, the guitar, some of my guitar heroes. And we were in, sorry, now I'm jumping from that 1998 to 2002. We were in LA for 3 months working and doing pre-production on our Foot and Mouth. And we were in this jam spot that was outside, like you parked your car outside, but it looked like a motel with no windows. So all these doors, and I guess, I mean, we can
hear. That sounds like Mates.
Yeah, and you can hear the bands jamming around. So I'm like, fuck, that guy sounds so good. He sounds like Slash. He's fucking ripping. And I'm like, fuck, the band's just ripping. It was like, and at the time, you didn't know, it was Velvet Revolver that was jamming beside us. We didn't even know. They were doing their thing with Mark Trombino, who worked with Jimmy Eat World and, you know, sure, Blink 182 and stuff. And so we were wanting to work with, you know, like a decent producer. And usually we do self-producing our stuff and all that. And
right.
So we got the chance to work with them, and but anyway, in that building, it was like fucking Def Leppard was down at the other corner. There was a fucking that band Crazy Town that had that song. They were like, and it was like there was Toto was there, but it was every day. There was just all these weird, yeah. Like, and it had no idea. But the only way we found out is like there was a coffee room that was like the community coffee room. And I remember
it totally sounds like Mates in North Hollywood. It sounds like Mates.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. And it
had to have been Mates.
A couple of the guys went and grabbed, there was like a food truck or something, and they grabbed some burritos from some rad Mexican food truck.
Oh, that's Mates. That's Mates.
And then I see them coming back. The doors open for the coffee room. I just went in to go get a coffee. And there's fucking, I'm like, there's Slash with just getting a coffee. And then I'm just like, what the fuck, Slash? Because I didn't expect. Because I was, you know, I'm from Vancouver. I don't see this, all these, you know, regular, right. Like this regular LA thing going on for us. And it was like, you know, 2002, so it was pretty star-stricken. Like, and then it's also an amazing guitar player that I looked up to in GNR. Like, you know, growing up with that too. Sure, it's like still trying to learn all the fucking stuff and trying to make myself a better guitar player. But yeah, and so Slash was like, I was just staring at him like fucking like a deer in headlights. And
you ask him about like a 1969 plexiglass head or something.
Yeah, no, actually, so not a 1969 plexi head, but I got to the room. I'm like, hold on, like, you know, and he's like, I run to the room and I come back. He's like thinking, okay, fucking wacko fan here or whatever. I run out of the room to our jam room and come back and I bring my 1969 Black Beauty, my custom Les Paul. Wow. So, actually, so, you know, and that's what I was playing, like, we were rehearsing. And he right away went, like, his eyes went, oh, like, he took it and put it on and started playing it.
Yeah.
He loves guitars, I was like, fucking, like, oh, like, this is like amazing. He's like playing my guitar, you know, like, and we were just talking, and he's super down to earth. He's such a fucking rad dude. And, but yeah, he was playing. Then he said, hey, are you interested in selling this? And then I was like, because it's my only.
He'll do that too. Yeah, yeah.
And then, yeah. And he goes, can I get my guitar guy to look at this? Would you be interested? And I'm like, as much as I'd like to tell everyone that Slash was interested or might buy my guitar or whatever, like, you know, would buy the guitar. It was my only, you know, vintage Les Paul that I had.
right.
And I couldn't get rid of it. So, but yeah, that was pretty fucking awesome to run into him and let him play the guitar, you know, and he was super down to earth. And so I went back in the room, I saw Tom walking up with a burrito. He could see me and I'm like going like this. He couldn't see Slash. So I'm like, come on. Cause Tom was a huge fan too. And he's like, he's like eating his burrito. Like what? I mean, come here. And then, you know, Slash is like in there and he comes in the room and Tom's eating his burrito. He's like, and he was like, oh, it's like, he's chewing on his burrito. Cause he's like, wasn't expecting to see Slash. So, you know, I'm not gonna go like, fucking Slash, come and see him, you know, obviously. And so it was cool. So after we met him and hung out and he was super rad, we went back into our room and then we went to Mark Tremaine. I was like, dude, I just fucking Slash, it was so rad, he's super nice. So all of us, Gabe, you know, at the time Craig was in the band, it was me, Gabe, Craig, and Tom, and we just fucking, you know, we started just doing, because we all knew it and we all knew the parts and the leads and everything. So because we had, but then we just jammed it and we played you know, the whole intro, the into the breakdown and then everything. And then Slash came into the room and just he did the little tip, like, kind of like, thank you. Like, and that was right. Cause we were expecting him to come in the room, but he didn't know if he could even hear us, but we just did it because we were so like inspired and just that, like, deal it. And then we just started playing Sweet Child. Yeah. And then that's it would just happen. And it was rad that he came in the room and just kind of did that. That's and then he was like, oh, we're going to be friends with Slash. This is going to be rad. Okay. It's like, would you be into doing a guitar solo on our record? You know, we're, you know, and then we never heard it from Slash again. Or our management tried to get him to whatever. We asked him. And then Tom said, there's no way he would have done a better solo than what I put on there. That was our excuse of what, you know.
Yeah, like, sure.
Our solo was good enough, you know. We didn't need Slash on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it would have been rad, obviously, to have it. We were just so excited in the moment.
That's great. Hey, Todd and I, we can share, we had a similar story. It's Slash related, but with a different twist. But Todd and I were eating burritos in the studio one day in the kitchen. Remember this, Todd? We were literally working on music in Hollywood, Slash. Yeah. And Slash goes, Todd goes, hey, is someone playing my bass rig or something? Do you hear anything? And so lo and behold, there's music going on because we're the band and we're not recording. And so Todd walks out and, Todd, who was playing your bass?
Yeah, I just kind of open the door and look in and Ronnie Wood from the Rolling Stones has my Thunderbird bass on going, do, 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 do. And I'm like, what?
He just showed up.
He just kind of randomly showed up. And then he was kind of like hung out for the day. I think he came to the house for dinner that night, didn't he? We had dinner at Slash's house once when it was like Ronnie Wood and Lemmy were both present at dinner. It was the strangest thing, yeah.
And Lemmy?
Yeah, and Lemmy was there, yeah.
At the table.
My memory serves right. I think he might have been wearing those Daisy Duke shorts, too, I feel like. But I could be wrong in that. I might have just created that.
Sounds like a fantasy.
That's a dream. The kind of weirdness. Maybe it was a dream. It's kind of the weirdness that goes on around that camp all the time because it's so super normal. One time I was like, we were in the studio and we had a Sunday off. So, and you know, on that Sunday, everybody just kind of goes in their different directions. And I randomly found out that Ted Neely, the guy who played Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar, the movie from the 70s, was playing this random show in like Calabasas or something like that. So me and a friend just went like, no way, went down. Watch this show, you know, just like this random little show. And went to a horror movie, a bunch of stuff. You know, I come back and I see Slash that next day at studio, and I'm kind of like, he goes, how was your Sunday? I go, oh, dude, it was crazy. I went and did this. You know, I felt like I'd just done like the most Hollywood crazy day I could imagine. He goes, and I go, what'd you do? And he goes, oh, I was at Al Pacino's house. It was his kid's birthday party. Johnny Depp was there. It was just some crazy story. And I was just like, okay, that's that one.
You wins.
Yeah. It was like his kid's that's birthday. So my kids had to go. And, you know, it was like, but the way he told it was very sort of like, it was almost kind of like it was hassle, you know, like kind of like, yeah, you know, I had to go over there. And I go, Al Pacino and Johnny Depp was, well, what? I was like, it was just very surreal. But yeah, that's cool. That's how weird his life. I remember saying that. Your life is weird. And he goes, yeah.
That's pretty cool that Johnny Depp, Al Pacino, that would be pretty.
Yeah. And to those guys, that's super normal. They're just bringing their kids. Just go play with the kids. You know, we can do whatever. So what was I going to say? No, I think it's really interesting looking back at you guys, because in a lot of ways, I felt like you guys were so ahead of a curve that was kind of like happening. In my memory, it seemed like you guys were the first of the Mohicans doing a punk rock thing that, and maybe it's because I was, you know, because you guys were there and we're at ground zero with you, that as I watched all these other things kind of happen, you know, like everything from The Offspring to, well, as you know more than me,
like that Green movement, Day, Nirvana,
that movement was such a huge thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it was Nirvana, really. It was kind of, you know what it was? It was because I think it was it 91 or 92 when Nirvana, I think, came out with with Nevermind?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember.
I love the Canadian pronunciation of Nirvana, by the way.
It's Nirvana, yes.
I miss it. I miss it, yeah.
But I want to show you guys something. And
please, please.
This is guaranteed to be like, not expecting. I promise there's no nudity. But at this time, this is right before. Let's see where it was. Where is this?
You're saying
this is the payoff will be good. The payoff will be good.
The pre-Nevermind era.
Okay. So you guys have. Obviously, you guys have. yeah, long hair, but there's someone here that had long hair too. I don't know if you can see.
Oh wow, is that you? We can't see the face, but it looks like Steve Perry. Oh no. Oh wait, no, it's Paul McCartney. Me.
No,
no kidding.
That's you. Wow. Wait,
but well, that's you.
But who's this?
Is that Lee Aaron?
Oh, that's Lee Aaron.
Oh my god. Way.
Oh my god.
Former Tube Talk guest Lee Aaron.
I had the Metal Queen. I had some hair. I had metal hair. And you know, it was kind of crazy. It's just, I remember, and Tom and I, when that album came out, cause me and Tom were playing in another band, at the time. It was a long time ago. We were just playing in a band with my younger brother that was actually singing it. We were both playing guitar, writing songs, and we weren't as, up front singing as much, or kind of more, you know, in the background. But, and it was funny because when that album came out, Nevermind again, but it kind of changed. Like, it was something cool and it had this energy and it was raw. And it's kind of like, mm-hmm. it was bringing sort of like this kind of punk thing back, you know, Nirvana, mm-hmm. even though it's, I guess, considered grunge. But there's some songs that have like this sort of punk, I mean, influence. It just sounds, you know, like, even though it was recorded and done with Butch, you know, Vegan, it was like, it sounded really good and stuff. And it just had this crazy energy to it. And I remember us, you know, Tom and I just trying, you know, forming the band Gob. And it was just weird. It was this rise just at the right time. I don't know. It was like, I mean, you know, I loved, like, obviously Van Halen and Iron Maiden and Slayer and all that. But I mean, I also listened to the police a lot. And there's a lot of new wave bands that I like too. And was, you know, like, I kind of thought, oh, is that a guilty pleasure or something? Maybe, you know,
not, right, right.
You know, but I you know, and the Ramones obviously too and stuff. Like, it was just, and then so these songs were coming out of us, and and they didn't make any sense with the other band. And then that band kind of just broke up. And then me and Tom made Gob, and then that's sort of started happening. And it was just I don't know. And then we basically recorded like an 8-track demo or nine-song EP that we recorded ourselves, like got someone else recorded, but we put it out ourselves and like printed CDs. Like back in 94, like you couldn't just do that on your computer. No one had, you know, no one really had computers at home and stuff. So you had to go, you know, it was like, it cost like a couple $1,000s to print like, you know, 500 CDs or something.
Totally.
So we did that and we had 500 and then we you know, mailed some out to College Station and then we went on tour the West Coast. Our first tour was like all the way down from, you know, Vancouver to San Diego and back. And it was like a, you know, like a real life learning, eye-opening kind of thing.
I bet.
Because you're like paying for 10, 20, 30 people. and that was like basically our whole career until, you know, when we did that Soda video in 95, when that came out. And all we wanted, that was like our first video. And we just wanted to build a bike ramp and just, we'll go, we don't care. Like, we didn't think that anyone would fucking watch it. But we just wanted to ride bikes. And just, you know, and my cousin said, hey, I got a Bolex camera. And for $1,600, he made this, you know, 16 mil video. And next thing you know, it's just like me and Tom riding on these BMX bikes, you know, and, you know, singing into the camera. And then we're just brought this ramp that we built at the Cultus Lake. And then we get chased out by the park enforcement thing. And then we just bring the ramp to another dock and keep doing it until we get chased out. Like, there's no way you can do it nowadays because they put like barriers and things so you can't like run up your bike up the dock usually. But anyway, and it was like, you know, in that video, and then at the very end of the video, which is, I don't know if you guys remember, I opened my mouth and a bunch of like these crane flies or
I remember that.
Leather jackets, whatever, giant, almost mosquito-looking like things. That original thing of that video was supposed to be the four of the band members, because it was a water kind of thing, and my cousin wanted us to be looking up at the camera from above and do like a synchronized swimming thing with little floaty things and just submerge underwater with each, you know, like each person around, like looking at the camera, like synchronized thing. Just, I mean, it would have been funny anyway, because it would have been, you know, four grown men like doing cigarette and just submerging for the end, but no one showed up for the end of the video. So my husband's like, I don't have the ending that I wanted. What are we going to do? And like, I'm like, I don't know. And then literally this fucking crane fly bug flies by and I go, I caught it. And I go, I could put one of these in my mouth. And he goes, how many can you put? I'm like, I don't know. I had this giant jar, like this glass jar. It was like whatever, pickle jar. I don't know, whatever. Full steel Gorski, let's bring this back around.
Yeah, exactly. Full circle.
We had a giant pickle jar, and it took me about 2 hours, literally, picking them off the grass in the side of the building. And then I'm like, oh my God, I don't know about this. You know, it's kind of weird. Yeah. And then, he's like, okay, let's do this. And so I'm like putting these in my mouth, and then, you know, because it's film, he's got to get ready, get the light right.
Oh, God,
and I'm holding these, and this is like, they're all like moving around. I'm like, this is a bad idea. Fuck. I could feel them all like trying to go in and like, what are they doing?
Ew.
Yeah, it wasn't, I just didn't think it through, you know, through because I thought, I'll put them in, open my mouth, they'll come out. But it was like, put them in, like, get not escaping, takes like 5 minutes, they're all in my mouth, and I'm still holding, he's getting the light meter, he's like, get a ruler, he's like, okay, you know, ruler, let's, you know, you guys get to set the, you know, and all that shit. And I'm like, hur, you know, and anyway,
finally
let them out, and then I ran to the bathroom and gargled Listerine, because I had no idea if they went on to feces or that. And then later on, we didn't have Wikipedia and stuff back then. But they didn't. A crane fly leather, they don't go on to, you know, it was just one of those things I did because.
Correct me if I'm wrong. That's got to be like pre-Jackass and all that kind of stuff.
It was. And yeah, it was, it started other people to do it.
100%. 100%.
Other bands, and I think Alanis Morissette did something, even, I think Gabe and the Bloody Chiclets, he put like a goldfish in his mouth at the end.
That's right.
It spawned this thing. But the whole thing that made it interesting, that video was it was on optional rotation. So the VJs would put, because it fit in a minute and 30 seconds because it was so short.
Right.
And every time at the end, they're like, did you see what he had in his mouth? Let's show that again. And they kept doing it. So it was kind of like, so I was like, you know,
it worked to your advantage.
Can you make bugs come out of your mouth? It's like, you know, like, I was like, And I even thought about it. Imagine if at the end of every show I opened my mouth and bugs came out. Like, how cool. Instead of fireworks, explosions, you know, big, gigantic fucking, you know, like fire flames. It's like I just open my mouth up and there's a big, big video screen and just.
Locusts come out. Yeah. Oh, wow.
It would probably get the same effect with the
audience. I think it would. No, I think it really sort of, I mean, in my memory, that video was on all the time. And then you guys reigned pretty solid from then on. Like, looking back at the videos, I was like, man, I remember these videos being on all of them are great. Like, all of them are like, is that a lot of that coming really from good. You guys? Or are we talking about like some guy writes up a treatment, or are you kind of like, no, we want to do this kind of idea?
So,
like the zombies or the.
Okay, so certain video, like
the soccer sports, or the tennis. Yeah, the tennis one.
Sports, it seemed like there's a sports themed kind of thing that it was totally by accident. But I mean, we did definitely wanted to build a ramp and do lake jumping, because so did the lyrics say, I want to jump in the lake, and the song, you know, sun shining down on the beach summer. And so definitely wanted to do that. But my cousin said, okay. So he wrote, like, it's storyboarded and literally drew pictures, like, and I'm, you know, like, I just was like, because he went to film school. So he, like, storyboarded all the shots.
Wow.
And he's like, it's a minute and 30 seconds. So he's like, I need, like, contingency footage. I need 3 to 4 times. It's like, so I need, like, you know, 5 or 6 minutes of film, which seems so short still. And he just filmed, and he had a camera that, when you look through, it's hard. He had to use a like a tape measure for distance, because he didn't know what it's film. You don't know what it's going to turn out until it gets, you know. And he had to be, so he bought this wind. It's a Bolex Swiss camera. You wind it up, and then it's Swiss mechanism. So when you wind it up you have about, I think, 30 seconds before it stops. But lucky for rock videos, there's never really long shots. Usually they're quick edits, right?
Yeah.
So.
Unless you got bugs in your mouth, then it's
and part of that too, he's just like, okay, Tom's brother, drive the van. You know, my cousin had the sliding door of the van open, and then he said, drive alongside Theo and Tom, and Tom's going to sing. And you know, I did cut Tom's mohawk, and I colored it and styled it. You know, and I bleached my hair blondissimo, whatever it was at the time. Anyway, so we're like riding these bikes, and this van is like. You know, he's filming with a bench, the hanging off the bench seat, like out of the fucking van, and just, you know.
Yeah, guerrilla filmmaker.
It's either he's like rolls up the sides, like, "Hey, kids, want some candy?" No, he's got the camera, and it was all guerrilla style, like this. And my cousin utilized. It's like, well, I can use that as a dolly shot using the van, and it worked because you can't. You don't think about it. It's like, how did they get that shot? He's like, there was a fucking guy driving. And the stereo is cranked with the 6x9s to hear the song playback.
Of course, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But of course, it's hard to sync it up because the film and all. It was like, so anyway, yeah. And then it was, so to answer your question, most of the videos we do come up with the ideas to spark it. There's been ones like the I Hear You Calling with the zombies. There was two video ideas. One was my cousin thought, hey, let's take you, Tom, Captain Kirk, you be Spock, do like a old 60s thing. You guys get called out to a planet and there's like a you know, these hot women, but they're actually aliens that are, you know, they morph into or whatever they become. And they take us to, so he wanted to film it all like that style, set style, that kind of shooting. And us be on a bridge and like, you know, and I thought, that's fucking amazing. That would be a great video. I Hear You Calling distress call from a planet.
Sure, yeah.
And at the same time, this guy from Toronto wrote a script where it was like these, you know, horror B movie style with zombies, and we're playing against a soccer game. They're like, oh my God. And then the band obviously went for something more that was a little bit more original, I guess, because it's like, I mean, even though at the time, again, maybe you're saying it ahead of the curve, there wasn't. I mean, zombies were around and movies were around, but I, you know, we were doing the zombie thing, I guess, before it really was like crazy and all these
things. Yeah.
I'm not saying that everyone saw these. Oh, I just saw her here calling. I got an idea. I'm going to watch, write the whole Walking Dead.
How about you are an influence to people?
I've seen that.
Look at these. This is some kids in Winnipeg that go to School of Rock that did your song.
That's so awesome.
I know. I saw that. Yeah, it is awesome. I think that's we gave so him a cool. shout out on the Gob Instagram.
I think that is so cool.
Yo, that's it, so it is awesome. So like, I don't even know how to explain it. When someone does a cover of your song and like they right? spend time, they it looks like it's almost better quality shot than our video.
Well, as amazing as that video is, I'm very disappointed we didn't get to see the Star Trek one. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, I could, you know, would have had obviously pointed ears put on, but
well, you know, and, hey, it's and never I'm ready. Too late.
Look at this. I was like practicing.
Doing your exercises. Yeah.
One, two, three, four. Yeah. One, two, three, four.
I hope somebody takes that and just like loops that for the rest of
Like I was telling you about my workout regimen with the, I do that and then I do three sets of that. And then I do the weightlifting on curling and then jacking off with the other hand. And then I switch and then back to one, two, three, four, one.
Well, it's working. It's working. You look younger than ever. I don't know. It's like, what? It's,
oh, thank you.
You look exact. You like you've been frozen in stasis of some sort of, it's fascinating in a good way.
Like a Swanson dinner.
Yeah. yeah, exactly. The Hungry Man.
You can't really see the true age of it because it's been frozen so long in the freezer until you pull it out. And then you're like, is this 3 years old or 3 months old?
Hey, it's delicious either way. That's the important
thing. Dessert was always a little sketch, though. The dessert, whatever that
chunk of apple shit. Thank you very much for that comment. I've been working for like a year and I lost 93 pounds, which... It's really hard. It's really hard to do, but I've been pushing myself and
good for you.
Yeah, through the COVID thing, you know, just I just wanted to not be.
Did you do the Theo? Was the Theo and the Thugs thing a COVID thing, or is this pre-COVID that you were doing?
It was pre-COVID. It was before, but we did do 9 shows in 10 days, BC, Alberta.
Wow.
And Gabe and Larry both. We did some Gob songs, like the songs I wrote for Gob, because sure. I had the whole all the stuff done, but we hadn't really recorded. But so we did 2 Thug songs and mostly the Gob songs. Tom was busy with Sum 41 and stuff, so sure. We wanted to do some touring in the fall or something. And Gabe and Steven were itching to play, and we hadn't played for a while, so. I started putting this together and then we did that little short run and it was right at the end of November, early December, I guess it ended. And then that was when you started hearing about COVID coming from, you know, Asia or whatever, like flights and people were talking about shutting things down. And then eventually, obviously, you know, we all know what happened. And
did it shut down any activities for you? Did you have stuff booked? Did you have touring, recording, anything like that?
I was trying to like 5 months of it because the studio that I work at with my with my friend, we had like a studio. So because COVID was so at the beginning, it was so scary where people were like, like changing their clothes and I don't know, some people got, you know, and it was, I mean, him and his wife were, you know, really, and he has a compromised immune system. So sure. It was very scary for him. So his wife would be like, you know, like come home and then take her clothes, and put it in a garbage bag. And then they would go into the machine right away. And so I wasn't really allowed to go over there because she was using the studio as an office because they had a kid. So it was only private for them to have work. So for 5 months, I was sort of like, I mean, I was at home. And so I could work on stuff and doing like demos, writing lyrics and work on stuff at home. But I couldn't really track and get things like, you know, to actually get going. And then it just kind of put it more of a thing. It's been taking forever to get this shit done. And it just, I'm still working on it, but as working on Gob songs too. So Tom played me some Gob songs, as well, just, over the phone, just like on FaceTime audio. And, so he's been writing too. And, you know, both back and forth, we played some stuff, but he had a whole bunch of some new stuff. So we're still gonna do. We're still doing Gob, and
of course.
Put out an album for a while. But
when was the last album? Actually, I was trying to do the math on that. It's been a minute. Yeah,
it's been. It almost hurts to say this. 2014.
That's in this day and age. In this day and age, didn't it feel like when you were a kid, Kiss would put out a record like every 6 months or something like that.
And yeah, then, like every, like even AC/DC, they put like what, yeah, Highway to Hell out in 80 and the 81 was Back in Black, or no, 79 to 80. It was like Highway to Hell.
Very quick, yeah.
Yeah, but they had Bon Scott, and then Bon Scott dies, and then next year they have Back in Black. It's like you come back with a like a huge record and with a new singer. It's just, it's so crazy. Like, yeah, they were putting out records. Like, I think Van Halen maybe did every couple years, I think. Or
in this day and age, though, because and because the music industry is so crazy, everybody's in multiple projects and everybody's got multiple things going on. So trying to get schedules together is a nightmare. You've got guys, like a lot of people have, you know, guys are in different states or in different provinces. You guys got, the band is comprised of people in different countries now. So it makes it all the more insane. But I think it makes for, you know, whenever that preparation starts to happen, when you guys decide it's time to push the gob button, put the gob signal up in the sky and call the guys together. There's your next video idea.
With their new hit song, Loogie.
It's a great band name.
It's like,
yeah.
Or it's, like gob. It's like they come back. It's like they're back with their new hit song, Loogie.
But it is kind of a no-brainer that at some point, you know, you guys will sort of find your way back to each other and do a run. I think that's really, I mean, like I say, it was like there was that, looking back on that stuff, it would just seem like there was a period there where you guys just crushed for, you know, that whole 10-year, 15-year span. You guys were just,
could do busy. Yeah, we were always on, yeah, we even went on the road, like Avril Lavigne brought us for 3 months.
That's
like,
we
did North America, Australia, Japan. And Japan was awesome. We had a record come out there and it did well. Like, we played Budokan, the Tom Rode My Shoulders did a guitar solo. We played Budokan, like, and that's pretty, like, and that was like, I mean, I know we got a gold record for World According to God, which is a very, I'm proud of it, like, you know, getting it on the wall. But I mean, even the Budokan, like playing at the Budokan where the Beatles, Nirvana, or Nirvana,
Cheap Trick,
obviously Kiss too. Yeah. Like all those bands, like the fucking iconic bands that played, and we played it. And it still was sold out, but it was sold out because of Avril, not because of us. But we still played to this audience, and you know, we rocked it out, and they, you know, and it was tons of love. Like we got lots of love.
Make sure you grab that Stephen Fairweather quote right there. I got to make sure that.
Which one's that one?
You gotta. You'll see. There it is.
Guys, come out.
Crime ain't going to fight itself in Gotham. The secret identity isn't supposed to give this kind of stuff away. It's like, oh, it's Stephen Fairweather. There's a guy running around in spandex and a mask saving people. It's probably Stephen Fairweather. Yeah.
Those look like Lululemon underwear. With American Apparel tank top.
Yeah. It's a.
He makes it look good, though.
He makes it look good, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Steven, that's great. I've lost track of all those guys. I used to talk to Tom. Well, we would see Tom with Sum 41 on occasion, you know. Nice. But I haven't talked to him in a long time. I knew he was in the States here. So, but of course he's East Coast, we're West Coast, and we ne'er shall cross paths again because of the rivalry, West Coast and all that.
Yeah, exactly.
You could add that to your.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally. So it's like this, and then it's metal. Like this, and then it's
metal.
Wow, that makes it more challenging.
It is challenging. Yeah, yeah. But no. You were saying not only that, what were yours, how many times did you guys go to Japan? That must have been quite an experience,
because
you guys crushed over there.
I mean,
what an experience that place is, huh?
Yeah, we did our own shows there too, and it was fucking like, in Canada, we were, when we did well, and there's like fans are like amazing, and Canada was awesome. But we went to Japan, and Foot Mouth was, you know, they had like a Japan MTV. They had our video on there. And then, and also because of the album, was put out by, Arista or BMG, I guess at the time, but we just had signed to Arista. And then like 14 weeks later, they were bought out by BMG or Sony bought them or whatever happened. So we were like in this purgatory thing for a little bit. But then we got dropped after, like, you know, I think we sold like, I think 250 or 300,000 records of that one.
Wow.
And we were like, holy shit, this is fucking amazing. Like, we never, you know, we thought that was a lot of records, and it's like, drop. You know,
that's the music business for you right there. Yeah.
But then you look at the roster, it's like on theirs, they had Outkast, Pink, Avril, Aretha Franklin, and then it's just like, and then Gob. And it's just like, okay, out of all those bands, who are going to drop? To the curb, Gob goes. But it was really, you know, it was just like, I mean, even though you're like over $1 million in debt with this record label, like spending, you know, over 250,000 something to make a record with Mark Trombino, American, you know, like all this money just because, you know, people getting paid, taking videos and all this. And then like before the record comes out, it's like, okay, you're in $1 million in debt already. And then, but when you get dropped, it's just like, we didn't have to pay anything of that back. So
it is the most fascinating business model. I mean, it doesn't really work in any other context. You know, the idea of throwing that kind of money, I guess the best description of it, I don't know about you, but when I was signed to Universal back in the day, they would send over on release day, I would always get a box of the new CDs. I didn't ask for them. They would just send them to me. And I'd be like, and I would go through this box of CDs. It's like a shoebox size of like, you know, 20 CDs or whatever. And I'd go like, oh, cool. There's this one. And there's this one. And the rest of these I've either never heard of or I'm not interested in. And I would think to myself, this is a box full of people's dreams. And record company money is just pouring into these things. And these will never be anything. You know, I mean, it was just like a mind-boggling. It was a very sobering thing to look at. And you think, well, that's the music industry.
Not anything, but it could be a good coaster.
Oh, yeah. Whenever you went over to some, like, A&R guy's house or something, they'd be like, hey, you want to, here's your soda. And you'd put it down on top of, like, you know, whoever. Age of Electric.
Yeah, it's right beside the Gob coaster.
Yeah. These aren't coasters. Yeah, I know. It's like,
no, I, so, yeah. It's
so fucking brutal.
Yeah.
That's the music business. And it sort of creates an interesting conversation of what someone like Gob could do now as far as straight to, or even Theo and the Thugs, really, as far as straight to Spotify, straight to streaming, straight to whatever. Yeah. And you kind of could do whatever you want, which is kind of part of the power of it. But it is also sort of like, what does that mean? You know, I don't even know anymore. It's a fascinating thing.
And you brought up earlier about the, I mean, I'm guessing you were talking about the Platinum Blonde cover I did with the video.
Yes, I want to talk about that. Yeah,
let's
talk about that.
What song?
It doesn't really matter from the first,
of course,
album, first EP.
And I love that song.
Me too.
When I was younger, and I love that song, and I thought it was such a cool song. Like, I liked New Wave, and at the time, that was sort of like, you know, like, I didn't even know they were from Canada. I thought they were British or something, because Martin
Holmes. They seem like they're British, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're of British descent, the singer or family is British. Or
Mark has an accent, yeah.
Yeah. And that's his mother on there, which I found out. That's his mother at the beginning. It says,
"Are you sitting comfortably?
Yeah.
Then we'll begin." Yeah.
And I wanted to do that with my song, but I didn't want to put it at the very beginning to take space. So then I ended up changing the middle section, getting the drummer to do like a halftime, almost John Bonham thing.
Yeah.
And
then
I put that vocal part of the girl saying it, which is Lawrence, the drummer's girlfriend. Yeah, I get her to, she was singing or saying that part. I got her to do it, and then it would just fit perfectly in time. So it worked in that section. Amazing. So I got to keep that.
So the other side of this conversation is the video. So for those who haven't seen it, and you must go watch it. There we go. Another Canadian legend is in this video. So is it from an actor?
Look at that. Look at that. Those are just sticky. Those are sticking to him. Oh, yeah. My God.
As he's catching him and holding him to himself.
Yeah. So Stephen Fairley, I mean, obviously he loves cult movies and these old, and that one is friggin' like, not that many people know this. And they actually thought that this was the real video. Like, it's actually footage from this movie that Thor paid, I think, himself and got like a whole budget for this movie. Where I think the band is rehearsing, but there's an alien that is. I haven't seen the whole movie, but I think it puts out this thing where I guess it's trying to take over and manipulate the people. And I guess Thor, being, you know, because he's obviously a muscle dude, and I don't know if it's supposed to be like almost like a comic book thing. He's like come to life and he's battling this thing. So Stephen Erther found this video and he just edited this video and then sent it to me with the song. And I think I had like one
nightmare.
One
writing it down.
Yeah. one, I think I had one note for him that was just like, okay, the beginning intro needs just to be a little bit different. But that was it. I just, you know, and I mean, it would have been an amazing video to actually make, like, that was your actor, but it was, you know, kind of self-served it in, and being obviously, keeping things on a budget, it worked out perfect because it didn't cost anything except Steven's time to edit this video. Look at, well, I mean, imagine, look at
imagine,
grab,
grab imagine that. If you had to pay for all this, these special effects and makeup.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it would have been at least like $47 or something.
Canadian.
He's got Mark Holmes' haircut too, so it's even more fitting.
Yeah, he does. I know, and that's what made it even better because it was a platinum blonde cover when he had that. Totally, it just worked out perfect.
You know what? I'm gonna pitch this to you, and I hope you can find it in your heart to make it happen. We get Pat Stewart, we get Stephen Fairweather. All the guys, we go to your place, you make pizza, we watch Rock and Roll Nightmare starring Thor together.
I'm in. So is there any, do we need to take any, like, mushrooms?
You might need to.
There he is, Stephen Fairweather. The man, the legend, Mr. Stephen Fairweather / Bruce Wayne.
Man, I was going to say, Steven looks more Bruce Wayne than Bruce Wayne these days. They should cast him.
Totally.
In the film. There you go.
Totally. Absolutely.
Yeah, they have, Robert Pattinson or whatever his name is?
I know. Robert Pattinson.
Yeah.
Robert who, I say, Stephen Fairweather, he's the real Bruce Wayne.
Fucking.
He's living in the Lower East Side, fighting
Twilight, crime. More like Twinkle Twinkle. I mean, I don't know about you, but I saw stars and hearts around my eyes when I looked at that picture.
Exactly. I started hearing Beatles songs as soon as I just looked in his eyes.
He's a good man.
He's the best.
I do these really cool hikes actually with his dad.
No way.
Out here in BC, like, I'll go meet up with him, and we do in White Rock, which is near and there's these like cliffs and stairs, fucking crazy stairs, and he's like, he's older than I am by like 20 years or something, and 25 years.
True.
And he's like, I at first when I was trying to keep up to him, I could not believe how amazing in shape he was, like, and I so bet. Anyway, it's challenging, so now, you know, and it made me step up my game too. So I go out and hang out with Steven's pops, and he's kind of been like my dad in the way too, like, just
that's
been
so there awesome.
For me. Yeah, he's like, he's rad. Yeah, I lost my dad actually in 2013, but
I'm sorry to hear that.
Terrible. Shit happens. But yeah, so it's been
what kind part of Van did you actually grow up in?
Well, I guess as a young Greek boy, I was always reared the wrong way, but
oh boy,
sorry, that was a joke.
That's hilarious. I just got that.
As a young Greek boy, lived obviously in Vancouver, they kept moving. I guess my dad was always trying to buy, sell, invest, like, and pay, you know, just doing, and he was he worked in a logging camp as a chef, like a cook. And, you know, he would be gone for like months sometimes and stuff.
And where were you living? You were
Vancouver, Burnaby, North Delta, Langley. And then in my teenage years, I was more in Langley.
So they moved,
formed the band.
You kind of moved out, like, out.
Yeah, they kept, of course we just did because their parents were the parents, and we were just, you know, we were just kids. So they kept moving. I mean, it would have been rather to stay obviously in the city because, you know, the real estate.
If they where are you now? What part of town do you live in now? What's your address? I need to know for the Rock and Roll Nightmare Party.
It's 6969.
666.
I'm on Surrey right now.
Oh, okay, cool.
I live out there. I mean, kind of by default, because, you know, my mom's in a home care and my dad passed away, so they had bought a house and they was a payer. So it was either sell the house or have a place to, you know, move in and have a place to live. So yeah, so it's just me and my brothers live in this kind of bigger 6-bedroom house that, but whatever. I mean, eventually maybe one day we'll sell it, but I mean, we need a place to live. So, and prices, 100%. I mean, even though we'll probably get really good money for that place to sell it. It just, you still need a place to live after that. And the houses
Vancouver is crazy. That's the thing about Vancouver. It's so really fucking crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, everywhere's crazy, really, but yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I think they bought, I think they bought the house like in 96. It was like just over 300,000 or something in 96 or something. It's worth like 1.4, 1.5 or something, because we get the realist. All these people always come by knocking. It's like, hey, you want to sell? You saw him in the neighborhood. And then, so it's, yeah, that, I mean, if you made an investment, but it's so hard. Like, how, I don't even know how people can do it unless you're like, you know, like you're Slash or Todd Kearns, you can buy a house.
I'm currently squatting in a Sam Ash at a Long McQuaid in Windsor, Ontario. Don't tell me.
Are you actually in Windsor right now?
No, I'm in Las Vegas.
You're in Vegas.
But again, you could sell get your share of that and come down to Vegas and buy a pretty damn nice house. The only way you can make that work is if you're leaving Vancouver to go somewhere where it's more affordable. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned before, because I was out there, I was helping, you know, at the time it was a girlfriend I was with for a long time, and I was helping her family out at this restaurant-y thing out in Thunder Bay.
Yeah.
And her uncle was like, you know, loved us, you know, Guns N' Roses, Ozzy, and he, you know, he lost all his hair pretty much because he had kids and he's older, but I didn't know that he was like this, you know, like a rocker dude. And he's like, I got tickets for Slash, like, you know, would you like to go? Because I, you know, my wife's not going to go. And I'm like, fucking, of course. So it was just funny because I went there that night and he was so stoked to go. And then I'm like, it's like, wait a minute, is that fucking Todd up there? And I see you up there. It's like, no, he's not playing guitar. He's playing bass. Yeah, yeah. I mean, and then I was just like, holy fuck, that's right. And then I, at the end of the show, because he was, you know, his name was Nando, and he was like, do you think we can meet, you know, Slash or whatever? And it was Slash's birthday that night. And
that's right.
He was pretty loaded. I came out to the stage and nice ladies were, you know, getting your attention. Obviously, you know, makes more sense than talking to me. But I had kind of yelled out, and it's like, I think I yelled something out to you. I say, what the hell is that's no... That bass guitar looks, it's not a, that's a funny looking guitar, you know, whatever, or something. And then you looked over and then you said, Theo, what the fuck are you doing here?
That was Thunder Bay? I'm like, what? Yeah, yeah.
Like, and then it was just like, ta-da, guys, I'm here. I've been following you.
Literally, I know you were fighting crime in Thunder Bay.
Yeah.
That was good to know. Yeah. It's a slower job, but it's got to be done. Yeah.
But that was pretty cool, and you took us backstage, and then
that was fun, man. It was really good to see you guys. Well, we'll have to do it again sometime.
We took you guys backstage, and like my mouth is still sore.
Hey, there's ass gas or grass. Well, we've kept you long enough, my friend. But let's organize that pizza party. I'll talk to Pat Stewart. Steven says he's in, actually.
So is this party in Vegas? Because it seems
no, like... I think it's probably your house because you got to make pizza. Or I guess you can make pizza here. Sure, come to Vegas. Yeah. Let's do it.
I have a stone, a pizza peel. I have the whole night. It takes 22 hours to make the crust. It's fermented.
What? Wow, man, that sounds real deal.
Yeah, it is real deal. It is like legit. And as a young 16-year-old learning to drive, listening to Metallica and delivering pizzas, you know, obviously I was sort of shown, you know, don't want to keep driving, you want to learn to make pizza. So I worked in many restaurants just being because of Greek family and just they always have like people that work in restaurants stereotypes.
You gotta make vegan pizza too.
I do make vegan pizza. Him and his dad eat vegan, and I made vegan pizzas for them. I don't know if he's nice. And he says in vegan, and he's tried it. I think the first couple that I made for him, I showed up. Like his dad actually said that it was the best pizza that he's ever tasted, and he doesn't say like he wouldn't say if he didn't like it, he just would say, I don't like this sucks. Or he actually said he was almost asking me like, we should open up a pizza place, like literally. And
yeah,
But I mean, it's hard because I learned over COVID. I'd make the crust, but I'd cook the crust for a few minutes and bring it out on the hot stone because the oven doesn't go higher than 550. So I'd have to figure out ways to cook because usually the ovens that cook would be around 900 Fahrenheit. So they're cooking within a few minutes, right? Like, so to do that, you know, Napolese or that kind of style pizza. So anyway, so I had to cook the crust a bit, bring it back out, put the toppings in. So I had figured out how to do it at home style, you know, and it worked out actually pretty good. So
I think you should open up a pizza place and then use the still from the end of the video with the bugs in your mouth as the advertisement.
Yeah, totally.
We put a pizza slice censoring the bugs. Yeah.
With the bugs, yeah.
I say, we'll put anything on our pizza.
Yeah.
You want bugs? Yeah. Doorknobs?
So here's the big question, Theo.
Okay.
Does pineapple belong on a pizza?
Oh boy.
Oh my God. Here you go. Here is the
rivalry continues. Yeah.
So I love pineapple, like by itself.
Sure.
And you love pizza by itself. And I love them both together. I love pineapple on pizza. So I make a veggie ham pineapple or mushroom, whatever. I figure it out because it'll make a. Sometimes you do like the little bit of the bitter with the sweet, like with olives and the pineapple, and with some hot, you know, pepper flakes or nice. Making it because the sweet in the heat is nice. So, and I mean, you know, isn't it a 50-50 debate? People call it's like fruit doesn't belong on pizza. Then I go, well, motherfucker, tomato is a fruit, so fuck you. So you can't have tomato on the fucking pizza.
Yeah, that's right.
Because tomatoes are on there. So
well, technically, Hawaiian pizza was created in Alberta, I believe. I want to say Edmonton or Calgary or something like that. Like that's the first idea of putting pineapples on a pizza and calling it Hawaiian 73? Pizza was.
Yeah, pizza and that 73, makes sense. Wow. Well, yeah, because was it Pizza 73 that did that?
I just think, isn't that what we all ate when we were drunk at the end of every gig? Was all Pizza 73. It was always ham and pineapple.
Sounds about right. It's just like, yeah. It's like the thing that's left over or like someone, or the promoter's like, I got you Pizza 73.
Yeah, exactly.
After the show, drinks, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
This will work.
This will work, yeah. Oh, pineapple on the pizza? Come on. No, I'm kidding.
So who doesn't like pineapple? Which one on pizza? Who doesn't like pineapple?
None of us are mad at it.
I love it.
More from Canada, so it's pretty normal to us.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's really normal. In Japan, they have some very interesting top. There's like a pear type thing they put on pizza sometimes in Japan.
Mm. How about they put wasabi on there too with a pear?
Probably. That sounds delicious.
How about pear infused with wasabi?
Ooh! See, now you're thinking like a pizza owner,
culinary
pizza shop owner,
culinary side of me is shining.
Stephen Fairweather says pizza's like when me and Theo share a bed on tour, no rules.
I like how Stephen's just like secretly stealing the show.
He's taking over the show. Yeah, he really has.
That was good. I should have. That's the best. That's how it should
Stop
be.
Just being a so giant.
Hey, look. Oh, my God. Look at all the likes and the follows all of a sudden.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's a good day for the internet to crash.
Exactly. Well, Steven, you're invited on any time. We can talk about, you know, fighting crime.
I actually talked to him earlier before I came on. I didn't even think about it. I was like, I could have had someone else on, but I don't know if it would be too much. But, I mean, I didn't think about it until.
That'd be fun, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, next time, good. Sure.
Yeah. And maybe even Tom. Actually, Tom. Actually, when there's something out, I could on your show, I can probably tell you this. I don't know if I'll get in trouble from my side of the band, but I can tell you on your shows. You'll be the first probably for me to announce this. But so Dine Alone Records, we did a little deal thing with. So it was the 25th anniversary of Too Late No Friends. Which is the record that had the soda with the us jumping in the lake, the video. But our first LP, which came out in 95, that is the first time on vinyl, and it's coming out on Dine Alone Records, which is like an independent, you know, Dine, I don't know if you know them, but from Canada. Mm-hmm. They're
right, control.
Yeah, but yeah, so they're releasing that. And I have the test pressing. Tom both had, so that's something that's, we're going to do it. We're going to do a tour for it. like that whole album, and obviously some other songs, but we want to do an actual Too Late No Friends tour. We've never done an album tour or but that is in the works. So hopefully in 2022, that'll be something people can look forward to. And I am stoked to do it because there's 20 songs on that record and it's only like 30 minutes or 29 minutes with 30 songs. So
great.
Wow.
So, I mean, for Tom and I, it's not too bad, but I think the drummer, it's like, cause the songs are like, like they're all fast,
really
but,
fast.
But Gabe's in good shape. So you'll be able to,
well, Gabe's but, a monster. Is Gabe still in Vancouver?
Yeah, he's in Vancouver. So yeah, I've jammed with him a few times. Actually, I went out last week and I think either was a drumstick or a hi-hat. He fucking shoved it through by accident through a Marshall cab into the speaker. So he did one of those, you know, shish kebab, you know, kind of things to the speaker, which, you know, it's like you think, okay, you know, how many times have you just wanted to stab a speaker? But obviously, you know, just to see, but not your own. But he did it. So I went out there and I took the speaker out to get one of the Celestion speakers repaired.
Oh my God.
Because he didn't know how to do it. So he called it an expert.
You have to. You have to.
So then, so he called me, and then I called someone else. I'm just kidding. No, yeah, I went in there and I got it. I got them all hooked up. And anyway, so I saw Gabe, and he was doing good.
Well, say hi to Gabe for us. Say hi to Tom for us. Say hi to all of them for us. And
I will.
Great. And well, they're probably going to be all at our pizza, rock and roll nightmare party later on. So
exactly, it'll be.
It was Sean Landy's speaker, apparently.
It'll be a pizza with magic mushrooms on it.
This movie's amazing.
So that the movie will actually make sense, and then because it looks like we might have to be on something to watch that, possibly.
Yeah, if you're like after the 20-minute mark, we might be like, okay, let's.
I mean, obviously, we'll be all on each other, but I mean, we need to be on something else.
No rules. No rules.
No rules. No fucking rules.
Okay, everybody go home now. Thanks so much for hanging out, everybody.
Yeah.
Big love. The audience is starting to close the show for us.
Bye, Chantel. Yeah, like we're leaving.
Okay, thanks for having me on, guys. That was awesome.
Thanks, Theo.
Thanks so much, Theo.
I feel like we only scratched the surface, really, but we'll...
Oh, yeah.
I know.
We should just
come back.
When we're having a pizza party, we'll make sure to air that. That'll be part of the show.
Webcam in the corner, a security camera.
Like an OnlyFans account. It'll be like...
Yeah, exactly. Almost like coin-operated, but virtually Bitcoin-operated.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Okay, let's keep in touch. Big love. I'll see you next time. I'm back in Vancouver, man.
Thank you, all the fans. Everyone. Thank you, everybody, for sticking around. Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Tuesday.